Start at it.
Here we go. Wooden Wagon, I see you coming around the corner. That's the wagon that Tom and I use to spread news and opinion. A lot of opinion, a lot of news. Sometimes you can't tell the difference between the news and opinion. Actually, you can. The opinion has a particular odor to it as we spread it for 2.5 hours. Here comes that wooden wagon. There we are. And Tom used to drive the wagon. Now we find out that thing just drives itself. Think about old horses and old mules. They know exactly where to go. No one needs to do anything with them. But we do have somebody seated to the left where Tom normally sits. Who's there?
I'm just telling you right now what I do every single week.
Derek Jack Anderson.
Every single week. I put my freaking heart and soul into this.
Right.
I study my ass off.
Right.
I don't go out there and laugh.
Okay.
It's not funny. It's not fun. Nothing's funny to me. I don't want to go out there and get embarrassed.
That's what I say. Got it. It's Derek Anderson, Tom, NFL quarterback.
Cincinnati Bengals.
Studies his ass off. All right, here we go. All righty.
Seahawks.
Do that one more time.
Seahawks.
There we go. Okay. Did you get a chance to watch?
Of course I did.
All right, I listened.
Oh, you did? Well, you're really on a listening tour. You don't read, you don't watch, you just listen.
I was driving, so of course I'm listening to Steve Rabel. And
yeah.
So I didn't get a chance to see how bad Russell Wilson was, but really?
It was, I mean, it was, in fact, I can't remember the last time I've ever heard Russell Wilson described as boneheaded, and yet he was by the national, by the ESPN game announcers. They were just shaking their head and says, well, listen, there's no way, two ways to put it. That is about as boneheaded a play that I've ever seen Russell Wilson make. What could you possibly do? And we're all talking about the interception, that he threw right down at the end of the half. We were on the goal line.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of fell back. He was getting tackled. And instead of just, you know.
Well, here, you want to hear the play? Here
okay,
it is.
Yeah, that's
here
better. Okay.
Russell takes a shotgun snap. He rolls right.
So far, so good. Got a snap, rolls right, right, Tom? Any problems yet?
Not so far.
He's looking now.
He's looking. Nothing wrong with looking. Looking's good.
Slips.
That's not good.
Now he looks. Now he drops back.
Now he drops back. After he slips, he drops back.
Now he gets rid of the ball.
Uh-oh.
It's picked off.
Oh.
Near side. Russell Wilson trying to throw it away, and it's picked off by Eric Kendricks as the rush got to Russell and trying to make something happen and scramble.
That looked like Russell Wilson from like last year.
Oh, it looked like Russell Wilson was doing his Jake Browning from the UW Huskies imitation. My brothers and I were all texting each other about it. Was and what's amazing to me, so Russell Wilson is one of the best maybe five quarterbacks in the league, right? This is his seventh year. He's in his prime. And the one thing that the coach said, Pete Carroll said, very sympathetically after the game is he says, gosh darn it, he says, I should have reminded him to get rid of the ball quickly. If there was any trouble, get rid of it quickly. And I thought, that's really interesting because one of the reasons, why did he throw it? Because if he got, it was at the end of the half, we didn't have any more timeouts, that we would have lost a chance score if he got sacked. And so that's why he threw it. The problem is that we could have got a pick six against him. It was so badly thrown and all that. But I just find it fascinating. So as good a pro as Russell Wilson is, his coach feels that he needs to remind him to not make a bonehead play.
Yeah.
That he said, if I only reminded him right before he went out into the huddle. And remember, if you get into trouble, just get rid of it quickly.
Yeah.
It's more important to preserve what we have. And yet that's exactly what maybe the reminder that he needed. And Russell Wilson took it, stepped up and, said, he says, that was on me. That was not a very good play, which is hard for him to admit that everything isn't perfect. But, it was embarrassing.
It's like being a boxer and having your trainer talk to you in the corner. Try not to let him hit you in the face. Bobby Wagner, field goal.
Dan Bailey with a 47-yard field goal.
Oh, really?
Off the left hash mark. 12. It's blocked! It's blocked! Bobby Wagner gets through and blocks it. A flag is down. Did Bobby jump over the top? Did he use leverage to get up to block it? He did jump over, but there you go. Yeah.
All right, there we go. Did he jump over? Is he okay?
I think that based on the analysis last night I saw in post game, he probably did break, you know, the rules, but it's still considered a judgment call rule. So maybe they hadn't determined that he used the leverage because he put his hands to balance himself on the helmets of his two fellow players.
Mm-hmm.
That I think you could technically have penalized him. And the reason that's so significant is we were ahead 6-0 at that point. They would have got a 15-yard penalty, which would have given them a first down, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
They could have driven in and taken the lead if they'd scored a touchdown. And the great thing they asked Bobby Wagner about that, he says, well, do you think you might have, you know, that might have been illegal? And he says, well, he says, who cares? He says, that would have been fine. If they called against us, they hadn't been able to score. They weren't going to score on us no matter what.
Right.
So, I mean, that's the kind of cocky confidence that we haven't heard since the Legion of Boom left town.
Speaking of cocky confidence, if you follow, like my son does, Frank Clark on Instagram, Rye loves this guy. And it seems like when you had Michael Bennett on the one end and you had Frank Clark on the other, Michael Bennett sucked up all the oxygen in the room, and Frank Clark didn't do much talking. He wasn't as prolific as he is on social media now. And the fact that he has really come into his own as a force out there on the field, if he's not in making the tackle, he's causing enough mayhem in the backfield in order to allow somebody like Bobby Wagner to rush in or a safety blitz or something. So Frank Clark has a message to Richard Sherman. Did you hear it, Tom?
Yeah. Do we have it on audio?
Unfortunately, I don't.
Okay. So, yes. Basically, he is calling Richard Sherman out.
Mm-hmm.
So, right before the game, Richard Sherman called us, called the Seahawks, a middle-of-the-road team.
Yeah.
And Frank Clark has this message of Richard Sherman. He says, oh, middle of the road are we after we've won, you know, 8 out of the last 11 games, you know, that we've won 4 in a row and all this,
mm-hmm.
and we smashed San Francisco. And we're now coming up again. Our next game will be against San Francisco. And he says that he just wants the end of the day. This is my team now. This is my defense. Richard Sherman and his era is over, which all is true. Now,
yes.
It's also Bobby Wagner's defense and so on. But the idea is that is old, you know, that's spilt milk. Like, the Legion of Boom were great, but this is no longer the Legion of Boom's team.
Yeah.
This is our team, and he's proud, and we're going to, you know, smash whomever. I mean, he's talking as cockily as Richard Sherman ever did about how good the Seahawks really are.
Yeah.
And then the final significant thing for me about what he had to say was, he arrived, if people don't remember, he was a rookie the year after we lost that Super Bowl. And he says, and he wasn't saying much because he was just trying to, you know, learn the ropes. But he says, there was still lingering, until this year, he says, there was lingering over the team the bad taste of that particular play.
Yeah.
And he says, finally, in effect, we've exercised ourselves of those demons.
Mm-hmm.
That all of the Legion of Boom, there's almost nobody left on the team except for, you know, Russell Wilson and on offense. But in terms of defense, there are just not that many players on defense anymore that were even there. And he says, we have a new take on life, and that is liberal.
Yes. Let's see. Moving on to the liberating moment of having Chuck Schumer, crying Chuck, and the much despised Nancy Pelosi in the White House with the much despised and maligned Donald Trump. And why they did this, I don't know why. Who organizes? You've got the press. You have them sitting there. Oh, by the way, Mike Pence is sitting there as well.
Pence there, too.
Pence is there. And you got Chuck Schumer. You got Nancy Pelosi. You got Trump. And they're all sitting there. What was the point of this? Was this just like, hey, look, we're sitting down and discussing, and then unfortunately somebody decided they wanted to have a conversation?
Well, here's what my hunch is. First off, you didn't, obviously they were going to have this meeting. You didn't have to have it televised. You didn't have to have a press there. So I heard this proposed over the weekend, and I think it rings true, that even if Trump doesn't get his wall, if he is seen as going to the brink, maybe even shutting down the government over not getting the wall, because the assumption is he's never going to get the wall. Even the Republicans are lukewarm about the wall, and the Democrats certainly aren't going to, you know, want to pay for the wall, that he will score better with his base by looking like he put up a good fight,
right.
So they won't walk away from him. And he figures as long as he keeps his base, that base is going to be the key to his reelection, because if he can guarantee a 30%, you know, no matter what happens, they'll be with me, then he can just campaign, you know, during the campaign, he can raise it. And so this might have been just all a political stunt that the Democrats fell right into, you know, by having this display. Now, the Democrats could say, well, on this, by the same token, we look strong because we told the president, hell no, you're not going to get the wall. Right. And so it's playing to both people's bases, so maybe they're both happy.
So if you haven't read Art of the Deal, I guess I'm guessing this is how you do it. So here we go. Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi. And remember, when the art of negotiation is that everybody has to leave the table feeling they got something. Nobody wants to feel like they got kicked in the ass. Right. They'll be walking away putting ice on it. You got to be able to say, well, you know what? We gave in here, but we got there. So here we go. Here's an interesting exchange. This is, I don't know what chapter this is from Art of the Deal.
The last time, Chuck, you shut it down.
No.
And then you opened it up very quickly. And
20 times.
I don't want to do what you did.
20 times, Chuck, you have called for, I will shut down the government if I don't get my wool. None of us have
said it. You want to know something?
You've said
it. Okay, you want to put that
on my...
You
said it.
I'll take it.
Okay, good.
You know what I'll say? Yes. If we don't get what we want, one way or the other, whether it's through you, through a military, through anything you want to call... I will shut down the government.
Okay, absolutely. Fair enough.
And
we
I am
disagree.
Proud, and I'll
we
tell you
disagree.
What, I am proud to shut down the government for border security, Chuck, because the people of this country don't want criminals and people that have lots of problems and drugs pouring into our country. So I will take the mantle. I will be the one to shut it down. I'm not going to blame you for it. The last time you shut it down, it didn't work. I will take the mantle of shutting down.
That is
and I'm going to shut it down for border
security. But we
security.
Believe you shouldn't shut it down.
Thank you very much, everybody.
And by the way, Nancy was in there earlier arguing with him as well. Here's the, just to hear the quick numbers on it. They've said, you know what, I'll tell you what, we'll give you $1.3 billion. You can use
that
to put up some sort of invisible fence or something. How about that, $1.3 billion? He says, no, I need $5 billion, right? And I'll need 60 votes in the Senate. He says, I got the votes in the House. We control the House for now. Nancy Pelosi jumps back in. No, you don't have those votes. He said, I have the House, but I need the Senate. I need to get 10 from you, Chuck. If I get 10 from you, then I got something. There's no need for me to bring up this legislation. There's no need for me to push this thing because I got to get the Senate on my side. And then it became the, you know, kind of back and forth nonsense that you got a chance to hear right there.
Yeah. But I think they were clearly playing for the camera.
Oh, yeah.
You should not bring in. That's why, you know, in Olympia, wasn't there a lot of discussion about, was it the teachers union anyway? Some kind of negotiations was happening with the government, and they say, but it was, where's our transparency, our you know, sort of open air? You cannot do negotiations like this, because then you end up playing to the camera, and you're not going to get anything done, unless the point is not to get anything done. And that might have been the plan for both of them. We're going to stake our claims
and
look good.
Yeah. Well, the idea of having public negotiation when it comes to, like, teachers' salaries and things like that, I understand. In fact, I think it's in Eastern Washington, one of the school districts over there, they said, yeah, we will do those publicly. The public can come in, sit down, and watch both sides go back and forth on it. Whether the press would cover something like that, I don't know. But you could follow legislators at C-SPAN. Dave Ross has a direct feed of C-SPAN right into his brain every single day sitting there watching it. You could watch these guys do this if you want to really see sausage being made. And by the way, did you see the story that happened? Was this in Everett? That it was a neo-Nazi group.
In Linwood.
Neo-Nazi group is apparently spending some time. They all get together for some annual celebration of some guy that ended up getting shot back in the 80s. I think his last name was Williams or something. So this group
Matthews.
Matthews. The group gets together, and he's sort of a martyr for them. They then have a party, and then they move to a bar. Has it been determined that of the 8 defendants, Tom, that these guys are all part of this actual neo-Nazi group?
Yeah, they're members of the Aryan Brotherhood, and they came from around the country, like North Carolina and Illinois, and to celebrate. This is this weekend was the anniversary of this guy's death. It was a since I'm familiar with Whidbey Island, I know what this happened in 1985. Robert Matthews, who had been a part of this, the killing, organizing the killing behind Alvin Berg, mm-hmm. Alan Berg, the Denver talk show host, and had robbed a lot of banks to kind of keep them going. Mm-hmm. He was tracked down to, based on a tip, he was tracked down to this cabin in the woods up on Whidbey Island, and mm-hmm. there was gunfire going off and ended up burning down the house. He died. That's now seen as kind of a memorial site for neo-Nazis, and they came to celebrate that. And then, afterwards, they ended up at this bar, I guess it's in Linwood, and they just went after, they said they wanted to change the music the DJ was playing. He was playing some R&B stuff, and they said, we want some hard stuff. And so he went to get his Black Sabbath album, I guess, and he didn't do it fast enough, and then they ended up beating the heck out of him because he was black. Is the claim that they call him the N-word and all of that. And so there's going to be a trial, but they were all arrested, and they're in jail, at least most of them right now.
Yeah, I think 8 defendants altogether. They touched his equipment. He said, don't touch my stuff. Apparently they touched it, got it back and forth. One of the people that worked in the bar also suffered a concussion as a result of trying to break up the fight. The DJ has said, I don't want to say anybody what my name is. He went in and non-life-threatening. He was discharged from the hospital. So these 8 guys are all going to be standing trial. I guess they're going to get him on a hate crime as well, because while they're punching him, did they use the N-word or something? So they're
That's what's been reported. Degree distance. That's the accusation, yes.
Got it. Academy looks wearily at Oscar host options, so it looks like they might go back to something they've done in the past, which is have no host.
Yeah, they are scrambling so much. You know, we just talked about the opening of the show. We talked about how the president had no plan B for his chief of staff when Kelly was fired. They say that the Academy wanted Kevin Hart, once they announced him, they just wanted Kevin Hart to apologize, but they were completely blindsided by him apologizing and walking away, and so they have no plan B themselves. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things being kicked around is maybe we'll just have random series of like big shot guests, and they would just come on, celebrity guests, and they would come on and they announce one thing and move on. They said kind of SNL skit type arrangement. Others were saying they would do like a group monologue or something. So clearly they're really scrambling, and there are a lot of people to say this. The Oscars have already, looked so bad over the ages with the hashtag, so white and all of this. Mm-hmm. And now this thing is just a fiasco, because now it's going to look like people are not going to want to do it, because look at all the hassle that the Kevin Hart nomination went through. And they're really kind of stuck. It used to be the best gig in show business, and now nobody wants it.
Here's what I would do. I would allow the public to vote. So what happens is, go into a commercial break, they say, coming up next, who do you want to host? And they would list like 10. You go online, and then people vote. And then you'd be able to see how many people are voting for a certain person. And then they'd come back. It looks like Tom Hanks has the opportunity to give the next award. And with that, they'd play music. So you would actually allow people at home to determine who's the next person to come up and give the next award. Make it
engagement.
Sort of, yes. Yeah. Come on now.
Engagement, social media. No, that's smart. The problem is, I think that everybody would keep voting for Kim Kardashian.
No, the person has to be in the room.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Have to get somebody in there. All right, we'll come back, take a fast, profitable break, and we'll get back to why, and I see if Tom is guilty of this. Why is it that when people travel anywhere in the world, the photo they take is the same photo that they saw just about 5 months before they started to plan their trip? And if you happen to want to go take this famous photo, you better hurry up, because something's happening to it. Right back. Alrighty. Stories we didn't get to, Tom. I'm looking at the list here. There's good stuff for tomorrow, including this idea of, are you there, God? The idea of AI creating a God, or will AI, artificial intelligence, eventually replace religion? And the idea, can artificial intelligence actually get to a point where it is thinking as we are thinking, and does it then have a conscience? The argument being is that the reason there is a, the idea is that we are a God because we have conscience. We're conscious of our existence where all other animals are not. We're far superior, made in the image of God. If you can create something that has a conscience, like AI, is therefore, have we then created, are we then our own gods? It's a crazy cool, that's part of it. Plus also the additional piece that GeekWire did when the idea they got a bunch of people together to talk about AI and God and religion. You enjoyed that piece, right, Tom?
Yeah. I mean, the key is right now, will AI become our God? Right now, AI may become our human.
Right.
If it does what we do better than we do... You know, and then it could become ineffective to be a human or to be a god. It's like that step beyond what our expectations are, our understandings of the mechanics of creating something.
Well, they want to squeeze out the bias, right? They said that's the big thing. How do you produce something when you yourself are fallible?
Yeah.
How does a fallible human who has biases to begin with insert info and data and something else to be bias free into something that is then supposed to be able to learn from failures and past data? We'll talk about that tomorrow.
Like we're discussing it.
Yeah. No, no, okay. It's good. I'll get to play some cuts for you tomorrow. But I found it to be an interesting topic. The fact that people travel and everybody takes photos now. There's a really fun video that was put up back in February. It won't work on radio, but it's a guy that takes all these Instagram photos and notices everybody takes the exact same shot, no matter where they travel. Everybody gets the Arc de Triomphe. Everybody gets the Berlin, that big arc thing in Berlin.
Brandenburg Gate.
People get the shot of the Empire State Building. There's just these iconic images that no matter where you go, everybody ends up taking the exact same photo.
Yeah, and the irony of this article is that most people travel now not for the experience of traveling, but to be able to recreate the picture that they saw in the travel brochure before they went on their trip. In other words, I want to go to Paris. Why? Because the Eiffel Tower is in Paris, and I'm going to go to Paris to take a picture of that Eiffel Tower, and it's going to look exactly like the Eiffel Tower picture that I saw when I went there. So you feel like you complete this circular loop, and it's like, what is the point of traveling if all you're doing is recreating something that somebody else has already done? And that's the danger. In fact, people are willing to sacrifice all sorts of things in order to get the big shot. They want to be able to put a shot on Instagram that shows what a beautiful Hawaii sun setting shot they had at the beach or this. And they said the problem is that people forget that they're there for other reasons. It's not just to capture the most beautiful shot, unless you're a photographer, but you end up leading a kind of anti-travel by only living for, the recording of the event rather than the actual event itself.
Right. Do you feel the need to take pictures? I fought against that urge. I was in Puerto Vallarta with the kids for 7 days, and it was a pretty spot, and I started taking pictures, then I started sending them to people. Then I realized nobody really cares. I mean, they don't, they look at it, but the amount of effort and care that I put into taking the photo, look at this beautiful place where we are. What do you get back? You get back like, wow, that's pretty, or whoa, you're lucky, or, stop showing off, or you're a jerk.
Yeah. I think that, so there is a little value, I think, like, talking about the Eiffel Tower shot. If you take a selfie, like, in front of the Eiffel Tower, if there's a shot of your family on a family trip in front of the Eiffel Tower, then it's not so much about the Eiffel Tower, it's more about the memory. Yeah, look at, we were all there in Paris or something like that. Mm-hmm. I get that, but no, one of the things that I learned early on traveling is that I can never recreate, when you say picture postcard, it's like, yeah, your photo, if it's just going to look like a postcard, just buy the damn postcard and don't, worry about that. Take pictures of people that you've met, or maybe you had a favorite restaurant that you went to, for 7 days in a row that had some kind of charm to it. Take pictures that are going to be like memory, boosters for you down the road, but don't just take it to show off. Hey, look at, I was in Venice. They've got these things called gondolas and they have canals. That's not the point of a picture.
Every year, my brother takes his kids on a trip, a family trip. And now they're like 22, 23, 24 years old. They still do these family trips. And every year, Robbie dutifully goes to Shutterfly and gets these photos turned into a book. Now, the pile of these books is underneath the coffee table in the living room. And I see them all piled up and I think, does anybody even look at these things? Does anybody even take this book out? Hey, remember the time we went to the Grand Canyon? Here are all of us at the Grand Canyon. But they take the photos. But does anybody bother to open up the old shoebox with all of the photos in it and go through them? No, they don't, do they?
Not nearly enough. However, I've got to say, they are fantastic. So my mother is 87, and so now we're going through and showing her photos from the past that she may not remember. And it's like, it is really valuable to have some of those. I love it. I see myself and my brothers and my, you know, mom and dad doing all these things. I think it's great to cherish photos, but you're right. We take 1,000 of them. We'll probably look at 25 of them in the next 25 years, and then you'll wonder why.
Yeah. I fight against the idea of sharing it with people for the reason of trying to know, let them know where I am.
Oh, right.
I get the idea, like, get a picture of you and your kid. Because then it's, the experience should just be between the two. By the way, if you do want to travel and go to see the Leaning Tower of Pisa, you better hurry up, because every year engineers measure the Leaning Tower of Pisa's precarious tilt. And last week they announced, Tom, that the tower is self-correcting and has been doing so for more than a decade, and it has finally stopped.
This is hilarious. So it had been tipping, obviously, for a couple hundred, 300 years, and they were afraid they were going to lose the entire thing. So this was, 20, 30 years ago. They took their best engineers and they corrected it by 16 inches. Mm-hmm. And that way it solidified it so it would not tip over. It could always stay at that slant. But they say what they didn't anticipate is over the last 17 years, it's moved a total of 1.5 inches, which means about a tenth of an inch each year. It's moved in the self-correcting, so it's now actually starting to stand up straight. So maybe in another 100 years, the Leaning Tower of Pisa will be a novelty for its name, not for its function.
We'll be right back with your letters. Write to us at MyNorthwest.com. Come on in through the Online Training Academy text line as well at 98973. Do love to hear from you. We'll be right back. By the way, Lake Washington Windows and Doors want you to know that, especially with the cold air and the cold weather right around the corner, in fact, it might even have been in your house, and a lot of that warm air was heading on out because of cracked windows and seals and doors. It's Lake Washington Windows and Doors. Give them a call today, Lake Washington Windows and Doors. All right, here we go. By the way, busybody's calling in the cops on that. I hate that. I always leave my bags. Carry him around, leave him at the gate.
Let me guess, you also park in front there and then just the long goodbyes.
And do the long goodbye. But I want to go to Starbucks. Put the bag down next to the gate. You walk away, you go to Starbucks, long line at Starbucks, get yourself a cup of coffee. Is that your bag? Calm down.
It is so cumbersome to bring all your luggage to go get a bagel.
Right. So you leave it and then people, get your bag. I was about to call the police. Okay. Wow. You really saved everybody.
That's why you're dumpster diving for your jacket.
That's a different story, Tom. It's a $700 jacket.
Hello?
Yeah, that's right, teeny tiny lady. Here comes the mailman. It smells so bad right now.
I'm the mailman. As you can see, I'm the mailman. Don't nobody mess with me. I'm the mailman. If you didn't know, I'm the mailman. I bring the mail to your door.
You busybodies. Stand that.
Keeping America safe.
Yeah, right. See something, say something. Hello, Teeny Tiny Lace. You can tell us about the letter of the day. Let's get started, Tom.
So we start off with the first story of our day about the police officer who spoke to Jason Rance about whether he should get his job back or not after punching a woman who was handcuffed. 206 writes in, sorry, how much training does one need to not hit someone in handcuffs?
Mm-hmm. 425. Judge Robart and everyone else needs to realize that no police use of force looks good. Even handcuff a compliant person is alarming to some. It's ugly, it's frightening, it's fast-moving reality out there and always has been. But the public has had this sanitized, false belief that it is not. Enter the cell phone. Cell phone videos are to police work what television was to the Vietnam War. Suddenly, reality hits.
Yep. Good point. On drug use issue 425, my husband, who is bipolar, uses microdosing and has been a great help with his anxiety, depression, and ADHD.
206, do not do an ayahuasca. Ayahuasca. I tried it in Brazil. Worst thing I've ever experienced. But my wife loved it.
Is that the thing that you're considering
doing? Yeah, I'm going to do it. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay. On the Seahawks win, Alan from Auburn. Just wanted to say a big thank you. Mm-hmm. Last week, I was lucky enough to win tickets to the Seahawks game last night, and my wife and I enjoyed the seats very much. It was a fantastic game. We had a wonderful time. I absolutely love the show, and I'm looking forward to the next live one soon, hopefully. Thanks for the opportunity, and thanks for being Tom and Curly.
Let's see. John's enema plan, 306 John. You do not want. Did you know that woman recently died from flushing her sinuses using tap water, and amoeba in the tap water got into her brain and killed her? So use sterile saline. Okay,
that's right. Why are we doing this? I forget now.
I don't know. Why do we do half the crap we do?
Tempting fate. Okay, and Larry in accounting. Oh, Larry in accounting. Andrew, buddy boy, time to get fully on board. Nose enema day. My hunch, it is going to be epic. And you, you lucky bastard, you'll be able to tell everyone years, even decades down the road, that you were there. My God, how I envy you.
I can't wait.
It's Larry in accounting. You'll see he's downstairs. You know where he is, right?
Downstairs. Of course.
By the way, because this, Tom, we talk about a lot of stuff, but this is like the Dutch oven lobster. You can't really cook an oven, cook a lobster by farting under a blanket. But this literally, you'll be able to see this. And I said that this is the way to go. You stick the enema in your nose and then blast it out the other side. So that's on Friday. And don't forget, people paid $15,000 to come in here and watch the show, and we're going to give them a little show.
Yeah, maybe we should have jacked up the price if we knew we were going to do the nose enema day. It would be the same day. Okay, and men and women's faces.
Yes.
Joseph in Bellevue writes in, some other loyal listeners may have found the face measuring story interesting, mm-hmm. but I'm not buying it.
No.
I still remember when you guys told me if my hand was bigger than my face, I was going to get cancer.
True.
My nose hurts just thinking about it. What?
Slapping his face in there. Trump arguing with Pelosi and Schumer, 206 says, it's all about the base, and 425 says, what happened to Mexico paying for the wall?
Oscar host, 425 suggests John Kelly, Oscar host. That would be hilarious. And then 206, John, you should host the Oscars and then turn it into an auction.
Uh-huh, and 58% of U.S. adults don't lift weights. 425 says, I'm one of those guys who loves lifting weights. I go to the gym, I run about a mile, I move about 10 tons of iron, and I'm in and out in half an hour. I date a woman 20 years younger than me, and I don't need to lie about my age on Tinder. Or sue to have it changed.
All right, wow. Then. John's Iron Man, Mike in Aspen.
Yeah.
John, nice job registering for Iron Man CDA. Mm-hmm. I'll be racing too, and I believe we're in the same age group. Want to race? Uh-oh, John.
Hey, Mike in Aspen. Hey, why don't you give me a call? We'll talk about it. Saved by the Bell. You're not supposed to race anybody. You are racing against yourself, Tom.
And now it is time for the letter of the day.
Thanks, Mike.
Comes from Darren in Falls City. The King County Restaurant Association is pleading for John not to do the nasal enema on Friday, citing the likelihood catastrophic financial losses during the lunch hour.
I'm not doing it in the restaurant.
Bye.